It was very much like what I've always imagined World War I was like. Lots of patrolling, a lot more no man's land because all the valleys in between. Raids, the odd set piece attack, but not very much. The last 5 months we were there, they were having the peace talks, which were to go on for another year. It was an interesting experience. For the fellows that had never been in action before, it was sort of an exhilarating experience. For the rest of us, it was sort of a bore.
A bore.
Well, compared to World War II and sort of the blood and thunder in World War II, Korea was a cakewalk,
Yeah.
you know. It was interesting, and of course, if you're a professional, this is going to sound sort of cliche-ridden, but if you're a professional, you have to practice your professional skills. And if you happen to be a professional soldier, then these means the skills of war. And so one was grateful to be able to take part in a war, however mundane. And a couple of things, though, that might be of some interest, connection with the 1st Battalion of Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry. We were in the line for 287 days without a break, and that, I believe, is a record in the Commonwealth armies. Not out of the line for 287 days. Always stand to, always the raids and the Chinese and that sort of thing. So that was some kind of a record. We always seized the 2nd Battalion, that we finished off there 2 months. They didn't do a year, they did 10 months in Korea. And then we did the first 2 months of the 3rd Battalion on top of that for good measure. So I went to Korea in September of 51, and I got home in December of 52. I had two birthdays there. And again, I just had some fine, fine soldiers. I can't say enough about the average Canadian soldier. They're really very good. They're very much better than the civilian populace thinks they are. They are really very good in operations. They're professional in every way, and it's a pity that the government isn't prepared ever to spend any money on them. They're well paid, but question of equipment, that sort of thing. Anyway, Korea was very interesting for a number of reasons. The food was great,
Yeah.
just super compared to World War II. You know, we were eating bully beef and M&V out of tin cans and that kind of thing, and throughout World War II. But in Korea, we were on the American supply system. They ate canned goods all the time, but we always had our kitchens dug right under the reverse slope of the hill you were defending. And that meant that, because we'd have steak 3 and 4 times a week, roast beef, steak, turkey, tremendous. Christ, couldn't believe it. It was an interesting experience. One of the things that interested me was my own personal reactions on my way to Korea. I thought, I could remember World War II and what it was like, and I knew that the 2nd Battalion had done some pretty heavy fighting in Korea. And while I'd fought Germans, all right, I had never fought Koreans or Chinese. I'd never fought Orientals, and they were good. They had rotten communications, but they were good soldiers. And I wondered, what all this would be like. And I was surprised at how calm I was, how relaxed I was about the whole thing. And even when I got to the front, it took about 10 minutes to get tuned in again, which ones you duck for, which ones you stand up for, that kind of thing. And I was really surprised. I think it was then that I realized that I really was a professional, that, I could move around the battlefield and do my job and keep myself and survive. And I went through all of Korea without a scratch, and I was at the front the whole period of time. I had an opportunity, two opportunities, to be chief instructor at the NCO school, but I didn't want to leave, and my CO backed me up, so the brigadier got off my back. But I was really surprised. I remember talking to a friend of mine who'd been in the army during the war but hadn't gotten to action. And I remember Bill saying, "Well, what's it all like?" And I said, "Well, I guess there's really no way I can tell you until you've been there." I said, "But if it makes you feel any better," I said, "I'm looking forward to this rather than the other way around, because I think it's what we do. That's what we're hired to do." And it turned out that way for me. I think I made a pretty good reputation for myself in Korea, and I was, as a result of it, selected to command the 1st Battalion contingent at the coronation of the Queen in 1953. And that too was a very entertaining, emotional exercise. I look back on my service, as you can probably guess, with a considerable degree of fondness.
Mm.
But Korea itself, one had to feel very sorry for the civilians that were being battered about and that kind of thing. We spent the whole time in bunkers or under canvas, as opposed to when you came out of the line in Northwest Europe or in Italy, you were generally billeted on people and you had sort of decent accommodation to live in. In Korea, there was none of that. And there were problems in Korea, health problems that we hadn't had in Northwest Europe or in Italy either, for that matter. We had, of course, the same problems with malaria that we had in Italy. We had a whole bunch of special type fevers, hemorrhagic fevers, and that kind of thing. And we were losing as many people, I guess, from disease in some ways as we were, despite all the advanced technology. There were a lot of other things. We'd learned a few things since World War II. Evacuation of the wounded was very much quicker. Helicopters that, of course, we'd never had in World War II. The MASHes were not like as portrayed on television.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, nobody really wanted to be evacuated to an American MASH because they didn't provide the same standard of medical care that we'd become used to in the Canadian Army. And they would amputate your leg rather than take the time to sew it up,
mm-hmm.
despite all this
yeah.
this garbage that came across. And then too, they were a purveyor of VD, and we had troubles with our troops who were buying sexual favors from the nurses at MASH and coming back with VD, and that mm-hmm. wasn't really helping us a hell of a lot either. So they had a Norwegian MASH, which was first class, but the American ones were nothing to write home about. And that was the general consensus of opinion. I had a friend of mine in the 2nd Battalion who got wounded in the legs, and he wouldn't let them put him out. A career soldier, no way in God's green earth did he want his leg taken off, because unlike the British Army, they can often find a job for you because it's a bigger army and your experience and your know-how counts for something. Whereas in the Canadian Army, if you're not physically fit, you're out of it. So I wouldn't want to put them out. But those are the sorts of things that one remembers about Korea. Tremendous leaves in Japan, like you
mm-hmm.
wouldn't believe. I had one R&R in Tokyo, and I was in Kyri when I broke my glasses, and I had to go there. They had an optometrist team that would spend 2 weeks in Japan and then 2 weeks in Korea. And I happened to break my specs while they were in Japan, so I had to be sent to Japan to get a new set. The CO was a little teed off at me. I broke the bloody thing to the result. After we'd come out of the line, after this 287 days, we had this great party. We weren't really out of the line. The brigade was in a blocking position, but we weren't face-to-face with the Chinese. So we invited everybody from divisional headquarters and flanking divisions and everything to this great black velvet party, the Guinness and Champagne. And everybody got pretty tight, me included. And somewhere along the night, I dropped my glasses and stepped on them, not on purpose, I can assure you. So the next morning, I marched in to see the CO, and I said, "Sir, I have to go to Japan." "The hell for? You've had R&R 5 days out of by this time of year." I said, "Well, that may be so, but I've broken my glasses, and I really can't take my company back in the line if I can't see what the hell's going on." Jeez, he said, "Dudley, get out." He was hungover, too. So that's Sunday morning, first thing, you see. And at 10 o'clock, we have a church parade. And after the church parade, I was sort of headed towards my vehicle. I really was a little bit concerned about this. I was hungover. And here's a CO walking down the side of the parade square, and I'm about to pass him. So I pass him without saluting, and I stopped, and I shouted at him, "Corporal, you know better than pass an officer without saluting." And a CO turned around, and he says, "All right, you bugger, you can go to Japan, but you better be back here in time." So off to Japan I went to get a new pair of glasses. He was a good fellow, and as I say, he was kind enough to consider my services to the unit sufficiently highly to allow me to be the guy that commanded. We had most of the battalions, we had representation from both the 1st and the 2nd Battalion, but the other two regular Army battalions only had representation from one other battalion. So we had like two officers, but in the 1st Battalion there was only one officer, in the 2nd Battalion there was only one officer, and that was someone chosen from the 1st Battalion, and I thought that was kind of good fun. And had a great time, a month in England, with all the high drama, and whining and dining, and I was to Buckingham Palace so often I began to think it was a hotel, you know, that kind of thing. It was great. And so there you are. That was Korea in the tail end. After that, back to regimental duty for the rest of 53, and then 4 years on the staff, and then they came to me one day and said my medical category was being lowered because of long service on bad stations, I guess, and that I would not be able to remain in the infantry, and they were proposing to promote me transfer me to the Service Corps, which was kind of them, but I decided after all these years, that I didn't want to be in the Service Corps. I had 20 years in by that time, so I asked for my release, and that was it.
Okay, thanks a lot, Mr. Dudley.